Mr. Speaker, Mr. Vice President, members of Congress, it's a great privilege to be here to outline a new budget and a new approach for governing our great country. I thank you for your invitation to speak here tonight. I know Congress had to formally invite me, and it could have been a close vote.
President Bush speaking on Tuesday, opening his address to a joint session of Congress. Dan Shore joins us. Good morning, Dan.
Morning, Scott.
And good morning. And we, this speech is not just a theatrical exercise. We will note the ratings were extremely low. Mm-hmm. Tony Soprano might outpoint the president on Sunday when that series returns. It did have some of the trappings of a State of the Union address, including or most notably that near constant applause.
That's right.
How do you assess
the Well, it's only a technicality purpose. That it's not called a State of the Union address because the Constitution says that from time to time, indicating that you've been through a year or so. So they don't call it a State of the Union. But you're right, it could as well serve for one. What did I think? I thought it was skillfully crafted. I thought it was well delivered. I think he continues to benefit from the earlier tendency to underrate him. Mm-hmm. I think he did some very interesting Clinton tactics, like stealing the other guy's issues and the other guy's slogans, racial profiling, patience, Bill of Rights, a role for government. Mm-hmm. Even the Kennedy slogan about getting the country moving again. I must say I was not aware the country wasn't moving, but let it go. An interesting charade where he got one side of the aisle to applaud for a tax cut bigger than the $1.6 trillion he wants, and the other side to applaud a smaller tax cut, and thus visibly placing him in the center.
A 207-page outline of the president's budget reached Capitol Hill on Wednesday. I don't know if you've read all of it, but what does it tell us?
Well, not quite all.
All right. Well, I just got there on Wednesday. What does it disclose about the administration's plan?
Well, as you suggest, it's not really a budget. Some of the biggest numbers that should be in it, defense, Social Security, are missing because they say these matters are still under study. There's more for education and more for Medicare, but then some cuts in spending, transportation, justice, interior, energy. What it is a kind of an austerity budget in a time of non-austerity. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because President Bush has ideas about what he wants to do with that surplus.
The Big Mo, as President Bush Sr. used to call movement on the tax cut, seems to be increasing on the Hill. The Ways and Means Committee approved it party line vote, I guess, on Thursday. Do you see that movement lasting?
Well, let's first note that the bipartisan cooperation, which the president said in his speech last night was a duty, didn't quite make it in Ways and Means. It was a party line vote. It will probably be a party line vote in the House. And you ask if this momentum will last. I think it'll probably last not much longer than that House vote, and then there's trouble ahead. I think the Democrats are simply waking up to the fact that President Bush is not figuring as he says, we need this much for government, and then we need this much for deficit reduction, and what's left over is for a tax cut. He is starting with a tax cut, and then he'll find out how much he has left to run the government and to reduce the deficit.
It's irresistible at this point to return to the question of President Clinton's pardons as he departed office, because the House Government Reform Committee took testimony from some of his senior staff on Thursday,
right.
Principally about the pardon of financier Mark Rich and trying to explore whether or not it was somehow induced by Denise Rich's contributions. Did we learn anything new in these proceedings?
Not in any great substance. We had these three Clinton White House staffers, John Podesta and Bruce Lindsay and Beth Nolan, and there was a waiver given to them so they could testify. And given that waiver, they said they all had opposed the pardon for Mark Rich. Some speculated that what made it happen was an appeal from Israeli Prime Minister Barak may have played some important role. We don't know. I'll tell you, I don't think we ever may really know what went on in that tortured, sleepless mind of Bill Clinton that night. The question always arises, bribery, quid pro quo. Well, I think it's very difficult to establish quid pro quo when you're dealing with people who deal with their friends and a lot is understood between them that doesn't have to be very specifically stated. You know, in the current New Republic, Andrew Sullivan says that we're dealing with a psychopathic personality. That may be a little strong, but I must say there is something quite strange when you see a brilliant man like Clinton, a brilliant man like Nixon, who seems bent on his own destruction.
Secretary of State Powell has finished up a four-day, seven-stop trip to the Middle East and Europe. centerpiece of his efforts was an effort to try and get an Iraqi sanctions program that's amenable to members of the old Gulf War coalition.
Right.
Did he have much luck?
Well, what he's trying to do is to save sanctions from going down the drain altogether by finding some more modest sanctions, emphasizing weapons rather than civilian goods, that might be acceptable to everybody in the Middle East and in Europe. He may have trouble selling that around there, but I suspect he's also having some trouble selling it within the Bush administration. There's been a very loud silence on the subject emitting from the White House, as though they say, call him, baby, this one is all yours.
And any effect of his stop in the Middle East to have on the continuing situation in Israel and Palestine?
Continuing situation in Israel and Palestine. I don't think that Colin Powell had much effect there. I think the Israelis didn't like his use about lifting the state of siege, which is a Palestinian formulation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the Palestinians were very moved by him. I think that things gone beyond where anybody like Colin Powell at this point can have any kind of effect. Ambassador Martin Indyk made a speech there the other night to a group of Israelis saying that Palestinian authority was simply collapsing. We were going to see gang rule there. And I think that at this point, as any Secretary of State goes there and says, look, be nice, but knowing they won't be nice.
Mm-hmm. Ariel Sharon has had some success, however, in forming a unity government. Does that suggest it's going to change the profile of his government?
Well, I don't know. I mean, he left it to Labor to choose their own people to occupy the main cabinet positions. So it's Benjamin Ben-Eliezer who's becoming the defense minister. Now, he's a Labor, but he's a hawk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be basically a hawkish government. And as I suggested, I'm not sure whether in the near term they're going to find anybody that they can negotiate with who has any great authority. It's a question now, if it is true, as Indyk says, that the thing is all falling apart, what if you do have a meeting mm-hmm. with Arafat? What can he do?
Let's come back here to the States. An earthquake rattled Seattle and much of the Northwest on Wednesday. Magnitude is 6.8. That's the strongest trembler we're told in 52 years. Over $1 billion in damages. But so far, just one, if we might phrase it that way, just one confirmed death. Do you abstract any lesson from that earthquake and its recovery?
Well, I'll tell you, Scott, what I was struck by. That casualties, as you suggested, were low. Damage could have been a lot worse if it were not that Seattle had worked so hard at making its infrastructure less earthquake prone, educating its citizens what to do. The school kids knew to climb on the desk to exit in single file. And let me mention that this happened on the day when President Bush decided to zero out $25 million in disaster preparedness program of the FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency. How is that for timing?
A quick question. What do you make of the Census Bureau ruling on Thursday that they're not going to adjust for an undercount?
Well, since we took the vote away from a great many people during the last election, now we can take personalities away. There's some 3 million odd people who probably were not counted. And the Census Bureau says we're not going to use a sampling method, which would tend to make up for that. If they weren't counted, it's just their hard luck.
Okay, thanks very much, Dan Shore.